very much. First of all, a little commercial. Louis Mulcahy, not unknown to this venerable forum, would be launching a book in Tralee. Graham Allen of his parish would be doing the launching. And it's on Sunday, the 14th or the 15th of October, I'm not sure which, but it's around that time, at 5:30, and wine will be served. Thank you very much.
At where?
Tralee's Tiara in Tralee.
Oh, yeah.
And now, more important matters, myself. We were fortunate enough to have Anne-Marie Nicoron as writer-in-residence in Kerry, and as a sort of a farewell, she's put together an anthology, of which this poem is one of the leading lights. It's called My Eyes Have Gone Their Own Way. I have been putting up with their foibles since early last year. I am too tolerant, and they at the eyes have by far exceeded their remit, showing me their take only. Friday last, they showed me a woman, girl woman, on a woodland path before metamorphosing her into an ambling fawn. They often said words to dance on the page, but gems have emerged. It's the same with my ears. I have listened and heard too much in the old manifestation. Recently, I was rebuked in an antique shop by the owner who intruded unwantedly into my thoughts. He was reclining on a chaise longue and was peeved. I didn't give his observations the attention he imagined they were worth. He apparently considered them of more import than the ferment of thought I was enjoying at the time, nurtured by the replicas of classical antiques that graced his establishment, notably a little one of Venus de Milo, which titillated beyond description. During a hiatus in which reverie, I informed him that now, after so many years, I excuse myself unilaterally of any duty to listen to anyone. Before, I had to listen to thunder, and right now, I prefer to imagine Venus and Anchises as they, heedless of myself, lay limbs entwined on a velvet thalamus. Anyway, how could I be sure he was there at all until this tiff with my eyes is resolved? Thank you.
Next up, we have Matthew Wyman. This is not the poem part. This is just, I just received an email from the English department in UCC. I'm a first year, and I was laughing silently to myself up there. It says, "Hello everyone, your first lecture is tomorrow and it's going to be great. I've been receiving a few emails from some of you about various things in the last week, and it has prompted me to alert everyone to something that is very different about university. Your lecturers in English all have doctorates and should be addressed as doctor rather than Miss or Mrs. or Mr. Many of your lecturers will be fine if you use first names. Watch how they sign off on emails to you. If they sign using a first name, that means they are comfortable with you using that to address them. That's my helpful hint of the day. Now, notwithstanding the passive-aggressive tone of the email, what I love most about it is Google have started auto-generating responses. So it says, "Sounds good, mister. Thanks for the heads up." So should I send that back?
Yeah.
So anyway, the first poet's poems made me think about burying identity, and now that I'm thinking of career and future and things like that, I'm in a different stage of my life, my quarter life crisis. I start to see this kind of burying my past in me, you know, within me. So this is called Do You Hear Me Now, and I wrote it while she was reading. You can see me now, but can you hear me now? But you silenced my phonics when I was down and out. Do you hear me now? Where do the sound waves of the attics get drowned out?
How do the echoes of the ghostly homeless get frowned down? You can hear me now, but when I had a pint in my hand, back when I was chemically loud, where did the ripple of my voice slouch? Minister Murphy, can you hear me now? Whether I've got a fucking degree under my belt or a needle in my arm, I'm still a shout. How? But you shut your ears to 10,000. Do you hear them now? 720,000 beats per minute left to reverberate in the cold of night. The drip of rain, the perspiration of loneliness and the waterfall of pain. Do you fucking hear them now? Do you, Owen? Or will you continue to pretend to not to?
Thank you.
We are
minute and time and maximum on poets, so just keep that in mind, please. And next up, can we have John Ryan?
Oh,
yeah. It just came to mind, the five-word thing I did earlier, the word I was trying to remember was recalcitrant, and I couldn't pronounce it. This is about passive-aggressive, actually, and it's about when you're in a relationship with somebody who is kind of passive-aggressive, and when that individual has done their thing, then this is the response of the person who's responding, who's not passive-aggressive. You look at me with ponderous eyes. You consider my gait and stance and demeanor. Silently, you capture my attention. You are cleverly set. You control your breath. You can pick at my weaknesses and make me doubt. What have I recalled accurately? And what might have I forgot? I'm usually not clear enough or focused. Should I not fill up duties and put things right? Right now, I am not translating all you are communicating. I'm only vaguely in time with the mild, quiet murmuring that escapes in your vocalization. You have mastered your subject. You know me so well. On your face are the patented lines of intrigue. The most amazing head that's now gently, the viceregal nose that's now the penetrating pretentiousness of the heart. Your ears hear all that is in sonar range. Your hair is impeccable. You bring in an intensity to the moment when I wish it was not. I will be the one to blink. This is no surprise to you, I think. I begin to stammer an explanation, but you just turn to leave the room, and then you shake your tail.
That's me, Charles.
This is not a drill. Scramble nets empty and ready for the next shot fired in anger. 2 hours to go, 6 months of duty. Second best was never our aim. A drizzle, every drop, every micron exposed under the arc lights. The start of a green wave. It heaves and weaves across our field of vision, hovering, then swelling and surging, roaring down our flanks again and again like a great ocean's fetch. Lookouts, one sniping, glass wiping, others text typing, flag hyping, a genie, grey as a battleship, fat as a school of bull seals, twirling over rail, swirling and curling past ensign and stanchion. In his guts, an orange flare signals, intense as the tang of gunpowder. We wait, nerves taut as a guy wire. Shortly, our fate will be sealed by whistle and semaphore. That tannoy is frantically squawking, a row lost in the clutter and clatter of a chopper in cloud overhead. A foghorn's blare cut off in mid-note. The cacophony signals the skipper bursting from the war games room. Mascot and crew in close formation. He hits the decks running. A dozen drums drowned, but 13,000 hands. Clap, clap, the rebel army. Clap, 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 the rebel army. Clap, clap, the rebel army. The shed explodes. It's not over yet. Roll on Friday.
Thanks, Shauna. The poem I want to do, I'm delighted with myself at the moment because it was highly commended in the chapbook, the Blue Nib chapbook, just one of those. And I also, I've been shortlisted for a Red Line Arts Festival for competition as well. So I'm looking for something yellow. If you hear about something yellow, lads, because I'm going to win that one, okay? This is called Shocky Gods. You wouldn't make a daisy change for the crucifix hanging in my mother and father's bedroom with the wounds uncovered. It felt cold. You wouldn't make a daisy chain for the big red statue on the turn of the stairs going up and coming down with his hands and hearts exposed. You wouldn't want to make a daisy chain for them, the chalky gods that were wedding presents, not really for adoration in our house. But I did make a daisy chain for one who stood in the low light outside our room, a little Our Lady. I made a secret daisy chain and placed it carefully round her tilted head and hooped it over her prayer hands and onto her feet. I made a daisy chain for her, and because I couldn't put a candle, I put a seashell there I knew she'd like.
Sean, this is a poem about growing up in North County Cork. It's called Village Savant. Picking on Mars bars outside the pub, feebly participation in a local march, growing up crooked on another's estimation, skittish return of mouth not given lightly, local jokes talking corners to send on this. Squandering money for sweets, highway means, cottage being a source of saccharine delight. New turns of phrase lost in the indigent, foolishly associated with the wrong type. Sitting beside a dud triggering a warning. Asking for advertisement to save the day, slinking onto the pub afterwards a silent act. Over gossiping the parish there on in. In spite of earshot, ducking for destruction, gulping drinks like goldfish like so. Never achieving the prize association, well-developed hips a source of despair, menstruation taking its time, diligently dithering, infinite speech after backswings true, waiting for the morning to burst its load. Married resting fed, sweets revenge on the straightforward, always different to the whole town, football ascending to a higher ground, killing beloveds for the sake of camaraderie, Raging Darlings now a sense of revenge.
Thank you, Patricia. Next, Ms. Lisa, please.
about the guest poet talking about migrant experience. I think you want to share this. It's a lot. I took in Italy last week when I went home. And day one, I bury my fingers in the little rocks of the car park in front of my window. I sit and smoke a cigarette, hugging my knees, become smaller. Surely I've done this forever. I must have been doing this forever. I dig with my fingers, looking for my fingers, digging years ago, the fingers I must have left here, fingers buried on the rocks, under fingers digging in the rocks, still looking. Day two, I sit with you next to your dead father. You talk about your childhood and the wood of the toys made for you and the wood of the box in the woods. I want to spread petals on his grave, but I have no flowers, so I smoke my cigarette and follow the fall of the ash on the father's pile of wood. Conscious of eternity and eternal overlapping of season and space and colors and place. Day three. I watch colors match. The colors of my pajamas with that of the couch, with that of the cups and with that of the hair of my cat, with the shirt of my mother, with the calendar hanging in the kitchen, with the bed sheets and towels and jumpers and every single strange book. A whole harmony of greens and blues and oranges and reds, galaxies of suns. Day three. I sit in the shade of your house, the shadows of your garden, olives and juicy tomatoes, pesto and bread, wine and alcohol, of course. Flowers on the table, flowers in the garden, sun in the flowers in the garden, mosquitoes and smoke, sweaty hands touching, sweaty legs touching, our foods touching. Day one, two, three, four. I throw the three coins and surprise me with turmeric and black pepper. I might be a rich Chinese adler of the 5th century. Three coins, the coin of the past, the coin of the present, the coin of the future, I say to myself. However, the idiotic routines are safe and beautiful, especially long-lost ones. Three coins on the table, in the sunshine, in the perfume of rosemary. Day five, naked and barefooted, finally, simple as a morning on some perfect occasions of happiness induced to lack of sleep.
Pressure, I'll just give you a short poem by the Liverpool poet Roger McGough about his unfaithful girlfriend called Monica. He goes, Monica, who's been eating my porridge while I've been away? My Quaker oats are nearly gone, what have you got to say? Someone's been at the whiskey and taken the Jaguar keys. And Monica, another thing, whose trousers are these? I love and trust you, darling, can't really believe you'd flirt, but there's a strange man under the table, wearing only a shirt. There's someone in the kitchen, someone behind the door. The house is full of naked men. Monica, don't you trust me anymore?
Hesitation. I sit to read and smoke, thinking like a pole with a half-cut throat, twisting from trust to artifice. I lay in your lap, and you lay down in mine. We smother each other, allowing vine to grow to our throats. But we do not need air. Not yet, my sweet. Not yet. Just there.
Can we have Shane next, please? I just want to start by saying, like, this is my first time kind of doing this or being here, and I've just really enjoyed it. So I thought I'd give one of my poems. First of all, I don't want to give you too much about the poem, just But I'd say it was inspired by the show The Big Bang Theory, somewhat. That's what. Anyway, here it is. It is not a word to be thrown around. Not like balls at the beach. Not like bottles at the bar. It is not a singer's new song. It is not the dresses done by those damn K's and J's. And it's not your fucking friend's new Instagram post. Because they are merely words strolling out of your mouth. See, it's like a walk for the point of walking. And it's like a look for the point of looking. Because they're nothing. They're meaningless. They're not that word. They're just not. And I'm sorry. It's just that word. That word. It just does something. It just does something. Something unexplainable. It's not like that huge golden name. It's not like that disappearing green line. It's not like that. I thought it could be molecules and particles, but it's not. Even that guy from the show says so. But the truth is, I don't know. I cannot tell you what it is, though I can tell you what it isn't. And that's as much as I am capable of. I am not vision. I am not God. It's undescribable. It's incredible. It's love.
Thank you very much, Shane. We only have 10 minutes left, so I might ask some of our accustomed regular people if you wouldn't mind, maybe, unless you have a new poem bursting out of you, perhaps maybe, you know, if you're like a, we can make your own decisions, but we only have 10 minutes left, so either be very quick, and I'll shut up now so we can be quicker. Okay, next up is Jamie Lawton, please.
I haven't been here since the day I got my diagnosis. I suppose it's cause I'm over where I was by head and shoulders. This old fortress made of broken stone fills me with a closeness to the lonely little kid who couldn't see beyond his nose's cause was hopeless. So he'd go away to be alone, and he transposed his stuttered thoughts and his emotions to the pad whereon he wrote them, and to put him in the zone, he would write them in a flow to the beats on his phone. Not so much a poet like a purist would use the word, more like Watsky or Shinoda, but to him the distinction blurred. Hip-hop was a music genre, rap a style of vocals, and how could it be either? The verse was never heard. This is where our battered young man's battle starts in earnest. Blessed or cursed with a brain that dealt with pain by getting further from the hurt, trying not to unearth it, which would be fine if I'd known the kind of mind I had to work with. So while the earth shook and the world took to driving in reverse, I found this old dirt nook where I could write my words. With each verse in the workbook, I tried to understand the purpose of the madness and the sadness that I had to hand. And so I made my stand, the fort had to be manned, and in its walls I had what my mentality demanded. This castle was my land, the world outside be damned, magic language set at my command.
One must ask the economists what price is a soul. One has a fair idea of the prices of bodies, minds, lifetimes, but what of the unique indwelling spirit and its worth? Does it just come for free with the aforementioned, or is there a debt created, a bond of obligation made when you take on another soul? But all this is not a bargain in the old term of the market, for the soul is also, until death, unalienable. The market is souls, is a market in sharing. How we share, let souls rub against each other, burnishing and smoothing, reciprocating, slowly being made for each other, soulmates at last.
Thank you very much, Jamie. Okay, next up is Benjamin Burns, please.
Rooks perch on the spines of slate roofs, silent and watchful. Their distribution draws attention to the geometry of the buildings beneath them. The evening sky is light and dark and slides across itself. I stare at the situation until I'm no longer staring at the situation.
Hi. This is a poem I wrote about a strange, terrible phenomenon that happened in Galway that nobody talks about. Heavy church doors stained with sin crack open to Sunday. God puts a wet thumb over the town. The streets are littered in cigarette butts and heels and men dipped in the drink. Around the bend, boys in loose ties or nooses throw rocks at yield signs, at bus stop boys, at shiny cars from away, fucking Americans. Woman in a lived-in body lives in motion across the road, pushes her baby carriage, mind set on the sermon or which mouth eats next. Small towns in Ireland start with kill or end in more. The cops don't carry guns. In Galway, there's a time of year where college kids toss their bodies into the river. Folks don't fear cops here. Folks fear God. Folks drink cans like gods on river duty. Boys here don't talk about depression, but we can stop being a bitch. We can let loose the night to a murder of pints. Jinxes dare us to yell into the altar that God, that God, that God may finally wake up, all pickled gut and brine, might retch into the bay, might stir the boys' bodies into the foam like flies, or catch her holy name in the wind. We beg or pray that she'll unhinge the church doors, dry them in the sun, exorcise the wine-stained sin and shredded lungs.
Be lucky, be nine cats' lives. Be mellow, chilled, shuffle and jive. Be brave and gamble, don't hedge your bets in life. Be white light, iridescent, glowing in the night. Be woke and know where specks, insects and the earth. And most of all, baby, be curious and marvel and shine up for all your worth.
Hunch. Death was very warm that night. A polyester wrestling mask, an axe, blunt, pounces, straddles. An angled slope of the head, perfect division for pooling blood. Slight air of a witty villain, a nickname, servant of darkness. Crimson perfume glazing walls, windows, bedsheets, an olfactory calling card. Yes, love, that's how it was. The Lamb of God is served to a vegan atheist chop by chop. Falls back in a gluttonous powergasm. Cast a side eye. Blood coming out of his ears. Blood coming out of his mouth.
Yes, Paul, I think her name is Barbara, is it?
Barbara.
Yes, she spoke the truth. We're living in dangerous times, and if somebody tells you the truth these days, we're wondering, is it? It's called Tell Me the Truth. Tell me the truth before I go to your war. Tell me the truth, I need to know what I'll be fighting for. This place I am going to in the prime of my youth is alien to me, and I do need to know the truth. I have no fight within me, with no country or no man, so tell me the truth before I might see, before I join your clan. Tell me the truth before I go to breathe my last breath. I hope it is quick, not slow, brutal, an awful death. I would willfully die a hero in my native place, but tell me the truth before I go and tell it to my face.
Thank you very much to everybody that participated in the open mic. If we could get a big round of applause for two best poets.